Today we're going to be talking to our very own Nancy Casey, who has contacts in Haiti and who's been to Haiti frequently and is planning to return to Haiti soon. And she's going to talk to us about what's going on there and bring us an update. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what do you hear from your contacts in Haiti?
Well, I've been getting emails mostly from... I've been somewhat in touch with the communities on Lago Nav, the island off the coast, where I know people where I go.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of in the imagining of what's happening in the countryside, and I'm sure this is all over Haiti too, people are, the food system is broken, so there's nothing to eat. And people are traumatized. They've lost whole branches of their extended families, and they're coming home injured. That's kind of the situation that people are bracing for in the countryside.
Wow.
So my friend Chris Lowe has gotten to Mate Noir, which is the kind of center of progressive activity where there's a school that she's sponsored. And I could read you what her most recent post.
Okay, before we get to that, mm-hmm. Let me ask you about an overview. You know, we've heard that in the cities there was a lot of building collapse,
mm-hmm.
But in the shanty areas and smaller villages, the structures aren't of the sort that collapse would really cause that much injury and death. Is that the case?
Well, in the countryside, you know, things are all spread out because it's farmland, too.
Mm-hmm.
And people, families, you know, a whole family will live in a small 10 by 10 house, and but they only sleep there. So if it had happened at night, it would have been a disaster in the countryside,
too.
So people tended to be outdoors, and then, you know, they're not all stacked on top of one another with all of that concrete.
And what about mudslides and landslides from unstable ground?
I haven't heard anything about that. A lot of houses did fall down. You know,
uh-huh.
House, people are homeless and there's cracks in houses. I haven't heard about, you know, the ground moving long distances. It's mostly hunger is the story. You know, they're in the same situation we'd be in if all the grocery stores were closed.
Right.
And all we could do would be to share with each other, all of us, all the food we had in our houses.
Right. I want to hear now about your reports from the area, but after we get those, I think I want to talk to you a little bit about the possible militarization of tragedies, disasters like this, and the dangers and pitfalls of that possibility.
Okay.
So, again, where's this posting from, and kind of orient us?
Okay, this is from Mate Noir. You know, people in the, let's orient us to, like, on the ground here in Moscow. Like, this morning was the Martin Luther King breakfast, for
mm-hmm.
example, and so the Human Rights Task Force invited me to go there and just have a table and be present to answer questions. And in folks passing by, with $600 was put in my donation jar.
Wow.
And the VP Foundation, which is a local organization that's collecting the money that we can send, we're going to send it directly for the bank transfer.
And it also sponsors Yin Radio, right?
Right, uh-huh. yeah. The donations, like, online and the checks have just been pouring in from people in the community. So
yeah, excellent.
Especially
if they have...
This is what I'm able to read to you here is what they're supporting.
Okay, excellent.
Uh-huh. So this is from Chris. This morning, me, T.U. Ute, and Gino went to take pictures of the houses in this area. Most of the homes have cracks or other problems. The ones made out of rocks have walls that have fallen in. Most people are sleeping outside. Down in Nan Plume, below the school, before Loretta's house, where they have those benches, Tikalut made a big bed for everyone out of leaves and branches. I went to the market. Rice is expensive. There's no millet in sight. The market was really small, and there wasn't much food in it at all. Next Friday is sure to be worse. Ban and Abner went to Plen Ma Pu. The hope and general understanding of the incident is much more limited there. People come to the school to receive news, etc. We have a radio, and we're working through the Internet. Abner said that the first house they stopped at had a mother with 9 kids. two of them have had children of their own already, and all are living in one house. The father is lost in Port-au-Prince. The mother couldn't be more than 40 at most. Her three parent figures were all confirmed dead. The house was cracked and damaged heavily. The back, the wall, which all of the beds are against, is leaning in and looks like it's going to fall in. Everyone believes the earthquake is going to happen again. We're planning to hold a couple of community meetings, one describing what happened and two, talking about the signs of a dangerous house, what is and what isn't unsafe. We hope to improve the Matinwa community's understanding of the earthquake, but we also need to reach other places, the ones that are really in the dark and really removed. After that, we'll talk about these things in the school, and we've agreed that even if there's no exams this year, there's a feeling that the school should reopen. We need this to happen. Otherwise, it seems that life has stopped.
Wow. Yeah, and in those smaller communities, I was thinking that schools and maybe clinics might be structures that were built up and had people in them even during the daytime.
Well, that's certainly, you know, I mean, when the first news of the earthquake came, like sort of every image that I had of a person standing next to a concrete wall came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the school in Matinwa is a three-story building, and it's heavily used by the community, but it mm-hmm. stood. It's got some damage, but it stood, you know. So it was a big relief for me to hear that nobody that I'm close to has died, although everybody I'm close to has lost family members.
Mm-hmm. And desperate to receive word of what's going on. I understand communications are a real problem.
Oh, they're just, you know, the only thing that you can find out really kind of is what's in front of your eyes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It's hard to imagine. I do have another posting from a woman in Port-au-Prince, and it gives some information about, you know, when we say we're going to send money to Lago Nav, there's this other effort to get food coming, you know, food coming to Lago Nav. So,
right,
like,
right.
To get it
in the chain,
yeah,
in the supply chain.
So I could read about some of the things that people
okay,
are doing
please
to, make,
do. Yeah.
to make that happen. This woman works with a hospital, which is just one of the kind of partner organizations we have that are working together in Port-au-Prince to make things happen. This was posted at 8 o'clock this morning. And Abner Munger is the person that made this posting. All of the problems that exist in catastrophes we are experiencing now. How to dispose of the bodies, the human waste, how to move people out of the city. Everyone here is fearing rain because they think that the first rain will move the earth under the standing houses, causing those buildings to fall as well. Each day, more things fall. Here at Matthew 25, which is the hospital, we've been doing amputations and other painful surgeries with no painkillers, no anesthesia, and nothing to work with. There are no tools for our doctors. We have numerous Haitian doctors and nurses here, but no supplies. We've run out of antibiotics twice, but then found them by searching at nearby clinics run by missions and NGOs. I've seen Belgian doctors and Cuban doctors all doing amazing work, but we've not seen or received any contact or assistance from higher agencies ourselves. Added pressure on the city right now is that due to lack of communications, many people from the provinces are coming in to search for their loved ones. They then add to the numbers of people stuck in Port-au-Prince with no way out, no food, and no water. I'm coordinating with AMERT, COMPAI, Beyond Borders, Matthew 25, and many other partners on an integrated response that will help us get through the next week, as well as prepare us to deal with the coming months of insecurity. We've coordinated the shipment of diesel from the open port in Cap Haïtien, the use of a shipping company to haul fuel from the Dominican Republic to Port-au-Prince, the use of a large protected storage compound to store the fuel. We have Haitian volunteers working with the John Hopkins team to conduct surveys to provide us important data on the number and locations of people who are in need of medical care so that when help and supplies arrive, we're able to efficiently get people to where they need to go. We have worked with grassroots leaders in the commune Anse Rouge to gather information throughout the commune on family names and locations in Port-au-Prince so that each village can send one or two people to search for loved ones in Port-au-Prince rather than everyone from the villages going to the disaster zone. It's kind of getting me. In general, We're being used as a place for information exchange. Journalists and organizational representatives are checking in daily to give updates and share information, which then I share with my contacts. Until the UN is able to reestablish a coordination base, we're making the Matthew 25 House the coordination headquarters for our operations. Haitians are helping each other in glorious acts of compassion and kindness everywhere you look. These people have endured so much unspeakable and unnecessary suffering. I'm today, as always, blessed to be walking with them in their struggle to overcome their awful and unfair circumstances, and I'm even more blessed to be sharing in the strength of spirit that makes each one of them my hero. That is Amber, let me get Amber's name right. I don't know this woman. Amber Munger. She's in Port-au-Prince.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that. And you're going to, you plan to return to Haiti soon, is that
I'm planning
correct?
On, yeah. Well, irony of ironies. There's a group of four of us that have been planning a trip to Lagunov for a while. And we got our ducks together, and we were in communication with the travel agent, and we said, it's a go, gave them the credit card information and all that stuff, and turned on the radio and got the news.
Wow.
So
it's kind of on hold now?
Yeah, well, we were planning our, you know, so like in our minds, we still got the same plan, that we were going to go to Haiti for 2 weeks in the middle of March, and we were going to go with an open mind and see what we could learn and understand, and, you know, that hasn't changed. Our expectations have certainly changed. But we're kind of assuming that the commercial flights will resume by then, and, you know, unless we get information from, like, our friends there that it's just unsafe to go, that would be hard for me to imagine.
Yes.
More mouths to feed, I don't know if that would be an issue. You know, we'll just find out. And but in our minds, we're still going.
Excellent.
On the 10th of March.
Excellent. Well, I wish you well. And, I was thinking about, there's a book that came out recently called A Paradise Made in Hell, and it's about the way people come together and assist each other and kind of form self-help groups during disasters. And we saw that some in New Orleans. And then it often happens that when the authorities, whoever they are, finally get organized and get in, they have a tendency to repress or even shut down some of the ad hoc community efforts to organize, you know. And because the military, even the UN military, has been controversial in Haiti recently. I wonder what kind of light you kind of see this disaster and response in.
Well, the thing about my perspective has to do part of it with the fact that this place that I go, Lagunov, is so remote.
Mm-hmm. It's very isolated.
That the government doesn't care about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all of those things that we read about that are governmental and organizational touches my experience in Haiti only indirectly, in the sense that every time something sort of unstable happens, boats stop going and people starve on Lagunov.
Right.
And so our focus on Lagunov, when we say "our," you know, I say like these folks that I'm in solidarity with that teach me things.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get a PhD in food self-sufficiency with their own bare hands to brace themselves against these kinds of disasters more than they want to get like a master's degree in the institutions that have failed them.
Understandable.
You know.
And how large a population are we talking about in this village area?
I think there's like on the island itself, which is like long and skinny. It's like 22 miles long and I don't know, 5 to 10 miles wide.
Wow.
There are about 225,000 people maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So it has the feel of a real well-organized campground there. And, you know, life in a well-organized campground can be a really good thing if the campground can function.
Right, right. Yeah. There's a lot of community there.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to kind of end on a hopeful note, mm-hmm. and that does seem hopeful. And I actually, in talking with you about Haiti, you've always expressed that you get a lot more out of that experience than you feel mm-hmm. that you give to that community.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's my, you know, I'll speechify. These people are ahead of us. They are post-collapse. They are not debating about whether or not we can stay the course and things won't be so bad. They are building the kind of society that we don't even realize about. The things mm-hmm. that they know about going forward under the worst kinds of odds to retain their dignity and their way of living. They do not look at a hillside with four trees on it and say, you know, I think we could cut three of those and it'd still be sustainable. You know, that debate, which so takes up so much of our energy, is not going on. And the debate there is, how are we going to work together? And uh-huh. what are we going to do? And right. it feels better to be in a place like that than it does to feel like there's something about your immediate life and world that is crazy, but you can't put your finger on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one is the ethic that we need to win rather than we need to cooperate.
Yeah.
That kind of runs countercurrents, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay, I have a quiz for the listeners.
Oh,
can I do my quiz?
Yeah,
can
absolutely.
I do so the listeners have and you're my only listener.
Right now.
So I'm gonna give you hints. There's the name of a place. It's long and skinny. It's packed with people. There's very little water. There's hope and no hope. A lot of people have lost members in their extended family in violent, sad deaths. What's the name of it?
I give. What is it?
It's Gaza.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It is long and skinny. Uh-huh.
Yeah, just like Lagunov.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
there's this thing that's in our face now that's called Haiti. I say like 2.5 weeks, it's going to float off.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, mm-hmm. and there's these...
It'll be off the headlines.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. know. So like, I think that's way cool. You're going to talk about Gaza next.
Uh-huh.
Because that's, you know, that's drone. We hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Haiti feels critical.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when... It's critical. It's critical every day.
It is.
For the people that live there.
It is.
And so...
And it's getting worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I bet there... I don't know. There's hope there that I bet we don't see.
Well, but, yes. I hope so. There certainly is great spirit.
Uh-huh.
And a great need for solidarity, although mm-hmm. it's easy, you know, the divide and rule tactics... seem to be prevailing at the moment. Anyway, yes, we'll be moving on to Gaza shortly. And Nancy, thank you so much for bringing
you,
us
Jerry.
Up to date on Haiti and just sharing some of the information mm-hmm. and insight that mm-hmm. you have with us.
So let me, can I ask you the contact information?
Yeah, okay, okay.
So my name is Nancy Casey, and my email address is nancy@turbonet.com. And if... I have kind of a sort of update list about, if you'd like to know kind of, you know, if you'd like my stuff, if you email me, I will kind of put you on the list and, mm-hmm. or send you information to, you know, to know more about this. If you would like to open your checkbook for this situation, you can write a check to VP Foundation. That's a nonprofit organization, again, that's going to, you know, get this money, like, right there into the hands of those folks. And the address is Post Office Box 9757, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
9757.
Right.
Okay.
Or you can go on the web to www.vpfound.org/support.html and click on Courageous Women, and then you can do the online thing.
And that's a group on
that's working with. Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat. That's neat. Hey, you did a fundraiser for them last fall.
Right, and there's another fundraiser coming up. There's a group of people that are manifesting on a breakfast fundraiser on February 21st.
Excellent.
And it's not fully manifested yet, but you can mark your calendar.
Okay, and keep us updated.
Okay, thank you very much, Jerry.
Thank you, Nancy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.